4, entitled Parents and Dental Knowledge.
Page number
36.
Api ched asi papibhya sarvibhya papakrit tamaha sarvam jnana plavena eva virginam santalishasi.
Translation. Even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. Purport. Proper understanding of one's constitutional position in relationship to Krishna is so nice that it can at once lift one from the struggle for existence which goes on in the ocean of messiness. This material world is sometimes regarded as an ocean of nescience and sometimes as a blazing forest. In the ocean, however expert a swimmer one may be, the struggle for existence is very severe. If someone comes forward and lifts the struggling swimmer from the ocean, he is the greatest savior. Perfect knowledge received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the path of liberation. The boat of Krishna consciousness is very simple, but at the same time, the most sublime. Of course, this verse is similar to another verse, right?
Yes.
What's that verse? Samyagya vasita. Even if one is considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, if he is engaged in devotional service, very quickly he will be I will rectify. Krishna says, I will rectify him. Of course, this verse says, Hari Bol. Well, you brought a Bhagavad Gita too, huh? Okay. Mania. This is Vikram. You know Vikram? Oh, no. This is actually. Wow. Where'd you get this? Huh? Oh, you made it yourself, huh? Oh, that was a monster salad. There's a little ant, too. All right, go. Sage meditating in his cave, and you know that story? No? You never heard that story before? Okay. He was meditating in a cave, and in the kingdom where he was living, the sheriff's men, the king's men, were chasing some thieves, and the thieves were running here and there in fear for their lives, because if they were caught, they were actually murderers and thieves and quite sinful people. So finally, in desperation, the thieves saw the same cave where the Muni was meditating. They didn't know, but they saw there's a cave, let's hide in there. So then the posse also was expert in finding out the trail of the thieves, you know. Finally they found them in the cave. So the cave was dark, and they, you know, gathered up all the thieves, and they took the sage away too. So they then took the thieves and the sage to the jail, and they held a trial. Actually, they knew everybody was guilty, so they just sentenced them all to death. Now, the method which they used to execute the criminals was quite... Actually, there's a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about it. I think they call it the Janga, being hoisted on the Janga, right? You don't know. They do have a stake with a point on it, and they put it up your rectum.
Yeah. Like Turks. They did this.
Turks did it.
Through the spine.
Yeah, it goes right up the spine. Yeah, and so you don't die right away, but you slide down the pole. It's like Count Dracula did that.
And there was even like competition who can, in former when Turks conquered the now Yugoslavian,
yeah,
who will make such torture.
Mm.
And who can live more, longer on this stick?
Yeah.
7 days, 10 days.
Really? Yes. People lasted, yes, 7 days?
Yes.
Oh my God. And the soldiers would make fun to see who lived longer.
Yes.
Yeah. And they would give them water?
Something like this.
How would they live without water?
They would make this.
Oh, they would make bedding.
I think so,
yeah.
And they will make this. They were so expert to do this.
Yeah.
Even maybe with they make this without pouring any blood.
Yeah.
From his body.
Yeah. Anyway, men know how to torture other men nicely. Huh? Wonderful world. Anyway, Manduk Muni was hoisted on the Janga, as they say. And, you know, he lived 15 days. I mean, he didn't die. He wasn't dying. All the other thieves died in about 3-4 days or whatever it was. So the sheriff's men became very worried that, well, who is this person who's not dying? So then the king came to understand that a very special person had been wrongly sentenced. So he immediately came there and he saw that he was a sage, and he begged forgiveness, and they couldn't do anything about the stick up his spine, and so they just broke it off, and he had to live with that stick in his spine for the rest of his life. But anyway, he forgave the king because he realized that the king was not ultimately the cause. The king was only the instrument. That we all live in this world because of our past activities, our karma, and whatever good things or bad things that happen to us is because of something we've done in our previous life, and we get a reaction. And that's the nature of the world, and there's no need to, you know, become angry at someone else. you're getting what you deserve. They may be acting as an instrument, and they may be getting their own karma in the process, but if they weren't doing it to you, someone else would be. You have to get your karma. So Mandukha, he realized this, but he was upset because he thought, my whole life I've been completely sinless. As a young man, I went to the forest and I've been meditating and, you know, very conscientious about spiritual life. And why has this happened? So he knew that ultimately Yamaraj was the one who, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, karmana daiva netrena. By the arrangement of higher authorities, we get our particular actions and reactions. So he went right to Yamaraj, and he demanded, he became angry with Yamaraj. Why has this happened? So then Yamaraj said that when you were a young boy, just a small boy, a small baby boy, and you took an ant and you pierced that ant with a little bit of grass, you were playing with the ant. So that's the nature of the material world. Everything that we do, we don't know what kind of reaction we're going to be getting. We walk on the street and we kill so many living entities. We cause pain and distress to so many other people, either by physically or verbally abusing them, or whatever it is, there's always some reaction. So here Krishna is saying that practically there's no way to act in the material world without some kind of mistake. I know myself. So many examples, even after having taken to devotional service, where, you know, what can I say? I've eaten meat in one sense. You know, I'm traveling Sankirtan or something. I remember the early days. This was, you know, 1970. And we were traveling. We were the very first traveling book distributing party. And we had nothing really to eat in the West. There's no vegetarian restaurants or anything, or even then it's dangerous, you don't know what you're eating. But so we just, okay, it was bread, you know, what's bread? Just some wheat and water and salt, nothing harm in that. And so we were eating bread and sandwiches and whatever, fruit, nuts, bread. And then one day we were distributing books in an area where there was a big bread factory, so we thought, okay, well, let's just go and see. And, you know, it turns out that they bake the bread, and the pans in which they put the bread on, put them into the oven, they grease them with pig fat, with lard. So we've been eating meat. And I remember once I bought some yogurt from the store, and it was a company in America called Danon. Do you know this? You have this
Danon.
D-A-N-N-O-N. Danon yogurt.
There is a similar in Italy, Danone. Okay.
Anyway, this company is, you know, they make their yogurt. There's no animal products in it. They don't have gelatin. It started with, anyway, they don't have gelatin in the yogurt. Gelatin is, you know, gelatin? Made from cows. Anyway, we I bought some yogurt one day and you know, offered the yogurt to me. For about 3 months, a period of 3 or 4 months, they put gelatin in their yogurt. Before, they didn't do it. And, you know, when I actually looked at the can, I realized there was gelatin in it. So, I mean, these are just small things, what to speak of bigger things that people do without realizing it, how many sinful activities people have, abortions, thinking, you know, women in America, you know, think, well, it's my body, you know, you can't tell me how, what I should do or not do with my body. If I want to have an abortion, then I'll have an abortion. And, you know, they don't realize that there's a heavy reaction for that, very heavy reaction for murdering a young child. And then they wonder why there are so many women, or men for that matter, killed in Croatia or Bosnia or Vietnam or Korea or Chechnya or anywhere in the world. Why are these innocent people all being killed? Well, why are so many innocent children being slaughtered? There's a reaction there. So it's very difficult to act in the world, to do anything, without some kind of sin. Every action is covered by fault. It's like fire is covered by smoke. Fire is such a wonderful thing. You know, we cook by fire, we keep warm by fire, we purify things by fire. But if you don't have very good wood, very, you know, perfectly burning wood, then you get smoke, and that's, you know, a fault in the fire. Krishna says here that the only way that we can actually relieve ourselves of the danger, of the responsibilities, to take full shelter of him. He gives the example of a boat, the boat of transcendental knowledge. Of course, transcendental knowledge can be very simple, in the sense that if there was a young devotee and you see her mother who comes here now, her name is Malati. She's quite a famous lady in ISKCON. She was one of the very first ladies, and she's still, you know, a devotee. So her daughter was named Saraswati. So Saraswati, as a young baby girl, she was maybe, you know, 4 years old, 3 years old, something like that. So while the devotees were preaching in India, and they would have programs in people's homes or on stage at a pandal or whatever, and Prabhupada would be there with his disciples, and Shyamasundara and Malati were there with their daughter Saraswati, and Saraswati would go up to people and, you know, she'd say, you know, who's Krishna? And then she would say, Krishna is God. You know, that's all she knew. It's very simple. And Prabhupada was very pleased that this is perfect knowledge. Young child has got this simple faith that Krishna is God. So it can be very simple, or it can be very sophisticated if we understand more about the law of karma, tatte nukampam susamikshamana kunjane vatma kritam viparkam. If we understand that not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. Nothing can happen in the whole universe without God being either directly or indirectly involved. He's the supreme controller. When we say Krishna is Parama Ishvara, but we give a definition that Krishna is the supreme controller. So the extent of his control is all pervasive, either directly or through his energies. Parasya shakti arvividaiva shruyate. Parasya shakti means he has many, many energies, and he is the energetic controller of all those energies. So he is controlling everything, and therefore if we know that and have faith like that, and if we surrender to him, then we'll feel, at least in our mind, we'll feel peaceful. Knowledge also means to understand that I'm eternal. We used to have a little rhyme when we were kids. Mother taught us a little rhyme. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names can never hurt me. You ever heard that one? No? Okay. I'm an eternal soul, so I've got this body for a certain period of time. I don't even know how long I've got this body for. I could lose it tomorrow. I don't know. Krishna Kanti, wonderful devotee. Nice, but you know Krishna Kanti? Nice brahmacharya, very sincere, always serving the Vaishnavas, putting on a big festival every year, Rath Yatra, and humbly hosting everybody, working hard, alone, small temple, not a lot of glory, but just dedicated to his spiritual master. All of a sudden, an accident. I think he's better now, actually. I heard he was. But he could have died. Good devotees have died. I remember devotees doing the same foolish thing, driving late at night on Sankirtan, getting in a car accident, killed. So there's no use in being attached to something. Maybe you think, well, it'll give me pleasure, but for how long? You can't guarantee it. But if we understand the self, even with a little preliminary knowledge, we can see that the soul survives the death of the childhood body. The soul passes into a youth body, and it survives the change or the death or whatever you want to call it of the youth body, and it passes into a middle-aged body and an old-aged body. So at least from that basic understanding, we can have enough faith to accept, on faith, but it's not blind faith, it's reasonable faith, that I will get another material body. This process is going on, but I am different from the body. I am the soul. Just with this knowledge alone, basic aham brahmasmi, I'm the soul, I'm not the body, we should be able to transcend material misery. There's another way that one can transcend material misery, and that is by regulation. The advantage to having a very regulated life is that so much of our energy goes into mental energy. In fact, these GBC meetings, we don't do a lot of physical work. Of course, now some of the GBC men are getting older, but even 10 years ago, many of them were, you know, I was in my 30s. Many of them were in their 30s. Not weak, strong, able to do physical labor. But we find ourselves becoming very, very tired at the end of 6 hours of meetings, 7 hours, 8 hours of meetings. And that after 3-4 days you become totally exhausted because of the mental energy expended in all of that thinking and concentrating and focusing on the problems of the society. So the amount of energy that we put into worrying about the body, taking care of the body, making so many calculations, at every moment we're faced with a situation. You know, at 9 o'clock, you know, I sit down to prasadam. So I have to figure out in my mind, well, will I have 3 japatis or will I have 5 japatis? You know, speculating like that. It's a decision we have to make. And then, you know, after prasadam, you know, will I work or will I sleep, you know? Or, you know, will I, whatever it is, we meet someone, and they invite us to go out on Sankirtan, and we get into a whole trip. Well, you know, do I really want to surrender? And it's called sankalpa and vikalpa, accepting and rejecting the mind, constantly doing that. So if we just get ourselves situated in a regulated condition, yuktahara viharasya, regulation in our ahar, our eating. There are 4, right, activities. Ahar, nidra, bhai, maitun. Ahar means eating. Nidra, sleeping, bhaya, fearing, maitun, sex, the animal activities. So Krishna's telling Arjuna, just yuktahara viharasa. You don't eat more, you don't eat less. You eat to live, not live to eat. You eat to live. If you just do that, don't eat less, but eat what you need to keep body and soul together. Of course, Prabhupada says, if in doubt, eat less. But we also have lust to deal with. Better to purify your lust by taking prasadam. But still, if you can regulate your eating, yukta chestasya karmasu, if you can regulate your activities, your work, yukta svapna vabodasya, if you can regulate your sleeping so that you don't, every day you don't think, well, shall I sleep 10 hours today or shall I sleep 12 or 14 or, you know. You know, I'm going to take 6 hours every day. I'll go to bed at the same time and I'll get up at the same time in the morning. Your mind stops thinking about it. The anxiety is no longer there. What will I eat today? I know I'm rice, dal, japati subject. I don't have to worry about it. The cook is, the prasadam is being offered. The cook is made. I'll sit down. And, you know, maybe there'll be a different subject or whatever, but I'll have rice, dal, japati subject. And
around our work. We have our schedule, you know, so many hours a day or so many days a week. There's actually a lot of, that's why they say an idle mind is worse than, much, much worse than having service to do. It's actually a privilege to have regulated devotional service. So, knowledge, the transcendental knowledge here, the boat of transcendental knowledge, is to understand that we can mitigate our material miseries by being regulated, by understanding that Krishna is the controller, that we are not the body, and that we should channel all of our energy to Krishna, give all of our everything, basically, kamana, manasa, gira, body, mind, words, focus on God, on our friend, who is Krishna. He is our friend. We have friends. We go up to them and talk to them, and we try to cultivate more friends. And you know, they die, and we see their body, and we think, you know, we got some pleasure from that friend, but when he dies, we see, well, that wasn't my friend. The person who we're looking for, the real person who is our friend, we can't see right now, but he's there in our heart. And if our senses are, if we're looking for him, if we really want to feel him, his presence, if we want to communicate with him, if we have a desire to do it, and we're on guard, then you can appreciate Krishna. Someone has got is bringing some roses, and or someone's cooking in the kitchen and you're in the living room, and all of a sudden they, you know, start cooking your favorite preparation, and you may not see them, but by your nose or whatever you can understand. So you can feel Krishna's presence in subtle ways, not necessarily by seeing, but if you want to see him and feel him, he's your friend, and if you try to give everything to him through the process of sadhana bhakti, you'll get results. Your life, just by regulation, that's his instruction anyway. Where did you get this idea to regulate your life? Well, it's there in the Bhagavad Gita. So if you follow that, you'll get results. Even on a material level, if you just follow the instruction, you'll get results. And your faith, amazingly enough, your strength, your faith, your courage, your enthusiasm, your courage to face the problems in life, to face the world, all these things will grow. And you'll be able to cross over the ocean of material miseries. I always like to quote this idea. I mean, of course, it's something that Prabhupada has said, but Mr. Covey also expresses it nicely. If you think that the problem in your life is out there, that very thought is the problem. It's not what happens to us that hurts us, but it's how we react to it. Now, of course, if you take the real meaning of that, again, it comes back to us, means to the soul. If something happens to my body, it really is not so important. I can't control that anyway. People react to all the situations in the material world, and they try to adjust everything so that they can be immune to or protected from. You know, so often when times are difficult, we withdraw into a shell. We become defensive when things happen that are beyond our control, and we put ourselves very much on the defensive. But it never does any good, because the problems are always there in the material world. Better that you understand that you cannot control the material world. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya. Krishna is the controller. Every blade of grass is controlled by him. All that you can do is to develop your consciousness, develop your it's funny, it's almost as simple as being happy. Prabhupada, chant Hare Krishna, have no worries, be happy. It sounds like just someone being nice, but on the other hand, it's actually an instruction. It's kind of a statement of being positive about everything. If you chant Hare Krishna, be happy. There's nothing to be unhappy about. You're Sat-Chit Ananda. You're eternal, you're full of knowledge, and potentially you're full of bliss, joy. If you just allow yourself to be happy and stop getting in the way, if you just worship Krishna and stop creating obstacles to real happiness, then that energy will flow. We're blocking it by our false ego, by our trying to control and manipulate circumstances. When Draupadi stopped trying to protect herself from Dushasan. You know that story, right?
Gambling?
Yes. You know that story. She was going to lose all her clothes. She was going to be totally stripped naked in a huge assembly of, you know, all the big men of the country. And, it would have been horrible. I mean, in those days, you know, it was the worst thing that could happen to a lady, practically, to lose her respectability and her... And she just, you know, she didn't know what to do. She tried to fight him at first, but he was a giant man. He was a muscular, powerful man. Not just an ordinary person, but he was an actual Kshatriya. There was no way she could fight him. When she realized that and stopped trying to be the controller and surrendered to Krishna, and then she was fully protected and fully happy and peaceful. So, in one sense, we have to be practical about life. It's not that we just, you know, give up all sense of caution. We're not on that level of Draupadi exactly. She's one of the chaste ladies that, you know, very perfect ladies in the universe, but certainly we can, the same principle we can adopt, that follow Lord Krishna's instructions through his representatives. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending are going to go on in any case. Whatever we're destined to get according to our karma, we'll get that. We'll get it either in the material world or we'll get it in Krishna consciousness. If we get it in Krishna consciousness, we just reinvest it in our spiritual life. We give it back to Krishna. Some devotees have the karma. Call it whatever you want, but some devotees get a lot of facility and some don't have much. But they can all have the same transcendental happiness if they're 100% surrendered to Krishna. It's not a question of quantity, it's a question of quality. Krishna doesn't care. Patram pushpam palam toyam. When he says that, it's not just that he's trying to make a show of being kind to poor people. He's actually saying, with all sincerity, that anyone can serve me equally. I see everyone equally. Samoham sarva bhuteshu. I see everyone equally. But if a man offers me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or some water, I'm very happy with him, especially if he does it with devotion. That's what I'm more concerned with than the physical offering. So this crossing over the ocean of miseries has a lot to do with us just buying a ticket, getting situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge is not something that someone who has a big brain or someone who has a PhD is more qualified to learn. It's interesting, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, generally one should accept a spiritual master who can teach you something. You should have some kind of appreciation that I'm learning something. But Bhaktisiddhanta, I mean, he was a walking encyclopedia. Who could teach him anything? He had a perfect memory. Whatever he had read 30 years previously, he could quote verbatim. We need folio to, you know, bring it up. Bhaktisiddhanta had folio in his head. He was a ray of Vishnu. Such a divine incarnation. So, but his father told him, you go and accept initiation from this illiterate man. Gorkasha couldn't sign his own name, couldn't read. He's illiterate. A Westerner would come and say, you know, who's this illiterate man? Can't even sign his name. Useless. They come to India and they see all these huts. And, oh, how can these people live like this? So poor. You know, they never consider that the people may be actually more happy. They have no cancer, they have no heart disease, they, you know, no divorce or very little, no simple living. work hard, whatever. So, but Bhaktisiddhanta, perhaps his father detected a little pride. I can't say, but have a little pride. And the best way to curb down false pride is to render service to the Vaishnavas, to become a humble servant of all the Vaishnavas, big and small. So Bhaktisiddhanta became the humble servant of Gaur Kishore. And of course Gaur Kishore was a very transcendental person. There's no doubt that he was a liberated soul. And he had such great humility that he didn't feel himself fit for public preaching. He thought, I'm too fallen. Although he was actually Jagat Guru, capable to be the spiritual master of the whole universe. But he just was very humble, shy. But Bhaktisiddhanta accepted him as his guru and served him faithfully until he died. Then he came and started his own mission. But before that, he served him. So it's not that transcendental knowledge is beyond our reach. And it's not a question of being a big, big scholar. We simply need to understand some very basic truths and apply them in our lives and be happy. Chant Hare Krishna.